Well, we're getting near the end of the year now. Maybe we're distracted by the holidays. Maybe it's the specials on TV. I don't know. But it's around this time, you know, the news kind of starts to sound a little like that teacher from Charlie Brown. Forces in Iraq. End of the year retail figures. World War III. Anybody got any questions? Don't get me wrong, all this stuff is important, but man, it can start to sound like it's the same stories over and over. It's relentless. I mean, it's enough to make you throw back your big round head and say,
"Oh, good grief."
This is In the Loop, everybody, and I'm Jeff Horwich. Tonight, we've set up a show that, by its very definition, leaves behind those usual suspects, gets us a fresh palate. We always build our episodes around a big dose of input and submissions from the people who listen. That's the whole loop concept. We send questions to you, you send ideas back to us, and out of that somehow comes a radio show. Well, this time we started with a truly blank canvas. We asked you what stories, issues, and trends stood out to you during the past year. And we got pages and pages of suggestions, way more than this little hour can hold. Lots of people offered up issues they think the media doesn't cover in enough depth. Environmental dangers, wage inequality, the cost of college, urban planning. And we came across ideas that would make great topics for a whole show down the road. But for tonight, we looked for a set of stories that more than anything else promised to help us know our listeners, our community, a little bit better. We look for trends that bring us inside individual lives, feelings, and experiences. And of course, we hope for an hour that gives some sense of the amazing variety and color that's in the world around us. Let's call tonight's episode The Year According to You. Our house band is with us, of course, the Smarts. We've got a packed lineup of sound, stories, songs, and guests, along with an audience here at Minnesota Public Radio, ready for whatever we throw at them. Whether you're in the house tonight, joining us by radio or by podcast, thanks for being with us here in The Loop. Now, as a prelude, let's take just a minute or two to get the year's news out of our system. So everybody sit back, relive the good times, and let 2007 wash over you with this compilation courtesy of our senior producer, Mark Brule.
This is World News
Nightly
Tonight.
Nightly News begins now.
Fox News Sunday.
This is the CBS
Evening. You're in a situation.
I'm Kitty Couric, CBS News.
From NPR News in Washington.
We begin with breaking
the
news.
The troop increase in Iraq.
Is it working?
No, the occupation is fueling the insurgency.
The surge is working.
The American surge has done little.
The surge is working.
And the surge is working because of the increase in troops.
Today in Washington,
so waterboarding,
it was a scene
the guy's
out of
laid on his back,
Carre.
A cloth over his face.
Waterboarding will guarantee a confession.
The feeling of drowning.
That does not mean it guarantees the truth.
Torture or not torture?
A close Senate
confirmed that there
CIA
were tapes.
CIA destroyed.
Urged the CIA not to do this.
I told our people get information
that
without
Iran
torture.
The CIA went ahead and did it anyway.
Why were the tapes destroyed, Senator?
Very good question.
We continue our series, Choosing the President, today.
Super Tuesday nears. Which candidate?
Rudy Giuliani, Mitt Romney,
Hillary
John
Clinton
McCain.
Is trying to maintain
the
her
Cinderella front man of the GOP, Mike Huckabee.
Maybe the most popular human being in America.
Oprah Winfrey. She campaigned for Barack Obama.
How can you get approval from Ashcroft for anything when he's under sedation,
Senator,
and incapacitated?
Specifically, I don't have any recollection about
a major freeway bridge over the Mississippi River has simply collapsed.
The concrete and steel bridge buckled suddenly.
A lot of families are going to lose somebody.
It's too dark. There's too much debris in the river.
It makes you wonder how safe our bridges are.
Do you think the risks of climate change are overhyped?
I want to thank the Nobel Committee.
2,500 scientists say the globe is getting warmer.
Reports of shrinking icebergs, rising sea levels,
and we are to blame.
They plan to avoid buying toys made in China.
They found
year.
Everything from lead to mercury, cadmium, and even arsenic in these toys.
Paris Hilton's a name that's on everyone's lips.
How'd you like being in jail?
He's got an iPhone!
Oh my God!
The value of the typical American house will decline.
Using their house like an ATM machine.
With the R word, recession.
Recession.
Rising
recession.
Healthcare costs.
$3 a gallon gas.
Weaker U.S. dollar.
So will Bernanke try and help kickstart the economy?
What is behind the dollar's fall?
This economy is really going to slow down.
Senator, I don't recall ever doing that.
Okay, I think we got everything in there. Sure, round of applause. Heck of a lot of work goes into that. Thank you, Mark. So that's the year in review. Now on to the year according to you. Our first item is something that came up just out of a casual conversation with somebody in our network. Our source unfortunately couldn't be here tonight, but she told us there was something very big happening around here with Spanglish music. That's kind of a blanket term that covers the fusion of two languages, of course, but also, in this case, it's the fusion of musical influences from around the world. Like most good things, that scene is getting a little less underground all the time, but it's still the kind of thing most of us probably didn't run across in the past year. So, here to give us a taste of what we're missing is a young woman raised just across the river on St. Paul's west side. Please welcome Maria Issa.
Yo, Twin Cities! Check it. Ha! Quítate la máscara, 'cause we ain't so nice, 'cause we ain't so nice. Quítate la máscara, 'cause it ain't so nice, 'cause it ain't so nice. Quítate la máscara, Minnesota nice, coming so mean, coming so mean. Quítate la máscara, time to let them know, time to let them know we blowing up. Twin Cities, stand up, let the game take they mask off. The whole soda spilling lakes, I'm flowing so hard. Rhymes saying native atmospheres, topping the charts. Whole movement, beaker being, yeah, they reaching for that star. North stay dough, what they can't create. Didn't see a girl from St. Paul coming out them caves. Help a tag and carry cans, DJs carry crates. Shaking hands with Maven like Vic, I rep my state. Her madresa taking baby steps to unleash the beast. Hat reads TCs, he thought to make them scream. Mask off those who haven't yet seen. It's time to recognize the top of the Mississippi. 651, 612, yes I'm ready. Like Paul Bunyan with his axe cutting down trees. Blaze it up, flick the ash, we the future, not the past. Riding up and down that river flowing so fast. Quítate la máscara, 'cause we ain't so nice, 'cause we ain't so nice. Get it? Quítate la máscara, 'cause it ain't so nice, 'cause it ain't so nice. Check it. Quítate la máscara, Minnesota nice, coming so mean, coming so mean. Quítate la máscara, it's time to let them know, time to let them know we blowing up that scene. Los Padrinos low riding on that West 107. Frogtown to Midway, Selby Rondo keep on stepping. East side, whole sacred native grounds. In the mouths of remembrance, St. Paul will be credited. Cross the mini gaps, south, pick up some beats. North side for soul food treats, over northeast. Dinky Town and Uptown, Linda Lake Street. Get the munchies at the hour, swing over to Capri's. Some know me as Maria, some know me as Lolita, but the one who takes your mask off is really Mucci. Let me spell it for you like Aquila's spelling B. It's a M-double-O-C-H-I-E. Let them know we come a long way to the Great Lakes. From the different rivers, different oceans, and different seas. So quítate la máscara and see who's saying, you know my words? Shh, listen, don't speak. Quítate la máscara, 'cause it ain't so nice, 'cause it ain't so nice. Quítate la máscara, 'cause it ain't so nice, 'cause it ain't so nice. Quítate la máscara, Minnesota nice, coming so mean, coming so mean. Quítate la máscara, time to let them know, time to let them know we blowing up the scene. Put your fist in the air, get them up, get them up. Put your fist in the air, get them up, get them up. Minnesota nice, coming so mean, get them up. Minnesota nice, coming so mean, get them up. Minnesota nice, 'cause it ain't so nice. Yeah, I said quítate la máscara, I said quítate la máscara. Let them know that we ain't so nice.
That's Maria Issa. Come take a seat over here. All right. Getting a public radio audience with their fists in the air. That's worth an award right there. Maria's album, MI Split Personalities, was published and produced under the M.A. Tracy Productions label, which is a Latin hip-hop production company founded in the Twin Cities by Melissa Riviere, who is with me as well. Thanks
Hello,
for coming
Jeff.
Out.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. A little bit about Melissa. She teaches an anthropology of hip-hop course at various universities, and she's working on her PhD, as a matter of fact, on elements of hip-hop in Cuba and Puerto Rico at the University of Minnesota. Let me ask you first, Maria, about the refrain of your song that's in Spanish for people
yes.
who don't speak Spanish.
Quítate la máscara.
Yeah, what's it mean?
It means take your mask off, and it signifies, well, it came from Ray Barreto, who's a Fania All-Star back in the 70s, and for me, I established it with a hip-hop track to tell the rest of the world it's time to, you know, unleash the beast. Minnesota's coming out, and we're definitely rocking it all over within music and, you know, pretty much anything that's coming out of Minnesota right now, we're making them recognize, and I think it has to do with community, so.
Melissa, when we talk about the fusion that's going on here. Certainly this is sort of more the hip-hop end of the spectrum, but what all do you think of when we think of this Spanglish music scene?
Looking specifically at Latinos doing music in the United States, we have a mix, everything from this general, what we'd call the tropical music, which would be the salsa, merengue, samba, tango. We also have rock. There's a large participant of the population that does Spanish rock or rock en español, starting in the United States all the way from Richie Valens all the way to, you know, we can talk about groups like Osomatli and King Chango today that are in the United States. And then when we talk about this movement, what we're doing with hip-hop isn't in of itself has very strong Latino origins in its construction in New York in the 1970s. So we have different derivatives therein. And that includes, for example, what we call Latin hip-hop. There's derivatives thereof that come from the influence all over Latin America of reggae, reggae español out of Panama, that leads to the development of a genre like reggaeton. So it's so diverse, but yet it still gets kind of umbrellaed under this pan-Latin identity.
So what's the effect of that when you're trying to get people to appreciate this music maybe for the first time, when there's so many different influences to it? How do you explain it?
I believe it all falls under a message, you know? Regardless what type of music, what genre of music it is, it's basically me as an artist and it being my album, I'm trying to get a message across to anybody who wants to open their ears.
Well, this got pitched to us as a kind of an underground phenomenon. Is that still accurate as far as you're concerned? Who's the audience for it right now?
Right. Well, I think it always depends where you're sitting, right? What's mainstream, what's underground? That's interesting because when I think about underground, I think of taking the two planks of a futon to create a studio booth, you know? And we did that last week. But then at the same time, this week, we're on NPR. So it's ironic. It always depends on where you're sitting.
And Maria, who's in the audiences for your live shows now when you look out there? Who are you seeing?
I see everybody. I see from, you know, the backpack hip-hoppers that are teens to a 65-year-old activist, feminist activist and her husband and children. So it's really good to see that it's crossing and it's knocking down barriers.
So you want this to go mainstream?
Yes.
Does it lose something when it gets on NPR?
You know, I think as long as we stay faithful to what our message is, we don't lose anything. And that's respect to any artist who has gone mainstream. It ain't so nice. It's not that easy. Oftentimes, too, we define mainstream by your access to, you know, avenues of distribution and limitations on resources for production. Or sometimes it's just education on the procedures in which to learn how to use the media and the resources that you have around you to give your message out. So a really important part for us as part of our project is edutainment.
Yes.
And that's combining the entertainment with education.
Glad to be able to let people know a little bit more about it. Thanks for being here. You can learn more about the music at Melissa's website, which is matraceproductions.com. And you can catch Maria coming up January 20th, 2008, when she headlines the Afro-Latin Martin Luther King Day tribute at First Ave in Minneapolis. Maria Issa and Melissa Riviere, thanks very much for coming
on
in the loop.
Thank you. It's an honor.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
You are listening to In the Loop. I'm Jeff Horwich. And our show tonight, The Year According to You. Tonight we're building the show from ideas brought to us by people in what we call our Public Insight Network. Anybody can join up, minnesotapublicradio.org/in-the-loop. Another idea from the network now that came to us from Valerie Shirley, who is here with us in our audience. Hey, Valerie.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Now, tell me in a nutshell, what was the idea that you thought we should look into?
Well, Muslims and Islam are so villainized in the media of late. I thought it would be nice for it to be reported the troubles that Muslim youth are facing among their peers and in schools and how they've become advocates, so to say, for Islam and how they've been put in a position to become teachers of their way of life.
Ambassadors was a word that came up when we were talking about it. It's a really neat concept. Thanks very much for coming tonight. Thanks for sharing the idea. We sent our producer, Julie Seipel, out there. She talked with Valerie's daughter and a few other kids. Let's have a listen to what she found.
My school newspaper approached me last year asking me if whether or not I would be willing to speak and clarify some of the issues about Islam.
I love that role because, you know, you see portrayals of Islam in media, and there's a lot of misconceptions.
This year, the newspaper offered to interview me again, except this time it's going to be more on holidays.
When I first went into St. Paul Academy, people were like, oh, what are you wearing on your head, and why are you wearing that?
There's a lot of just questions about, like, where do you pray towards?
First of all, they say, oh, you're fasting for a month. How do you survive? You know, aren't you going to die?
Sometimes people ask me, do I have hair? Just because I wear a scarf. I'm like, yes, I have hair. I'm not bald.
They ask me a lot about women's
people
rights.
People ask me if I'm going to go to heaven if I blow myself up. I'm like, no.
You'll hear someone talking about it, joking around maybe about the religion, about like it being a terroristic religion or whatever.
I think that's when I stood up and I said, I'd be willing to clarify any of that, that I was Muslim and that I would definitely explain anything that they had any questions about.
It's probably hardest when the whole class is looking to you for a question, when the teacher and the class are both looking at you and they want an answer like then and there, and maybe you don't have the answer.
I don't know.
Can I get back to you with that.
Like,
yeah, there are times when I don't know because there's a lot to know and there's a lot that I don't
then
know.
Then either I ask my mom, and if she doesn't know, then I ask one of my mom's good friends who's kind of like a scholar.
I have to talk to my dad or someone else and try to figure out the thing and then come back the next day and try to explain.
Sometimes I don't like being asked the same exact question over and over from like different people. Somebody's like, oh, why do you wear that? I'll tell them. 20 minutes later, somebody else comes up. I'm like, oh, why do you wear that scarf? Sometimes it gets a little annoying.
I don't think I've ever reached a point where I've gotten tired of answering questions.
I want to do it. I'll tell them something about Islam, and they'll think that's the strangest thing, and then I'll connect it to something in Christianity. And then you just see their face. It just pauses for a second, and they're like, wow, that's exactly the same, only in just a little different way.
I think that if all of us actually try to answer questions, people won't think like these random things anymore.
I just want to make sure that they understand that Islam is a religion that is based entirely on peace.
I want them to know that it's a rational religion.
It's not a violent religion like it's portrayed in the media.
By sharing what knowledge I have, you know, it's not a great amount of knowledge, but it's a beginning, and they can at least understand some of the basis things and then perhaps have a better understanding with this knowledge.
Now here's who we heard there, Salwa Drake, who's a freshman at St. Paul Academy, Josh Anwar, who's a junior at Centennial High School, Samina Ahmed, who's a senior at Burnsville Senior High School, and Zubair Saeed, who's a senior at Moundsview High School. Thanks to Julie Seipel, our producer, for pulling all that together for us. We've got another listener from our Public Insight Network who sent us a suggestion about a story that maybe hasn't gotten much attention this past year, Charles Robinson. There's Charles. Charles, thanks for coming to the show.
Hi, thank you.
What's the story that you suggested maybe isn't getting covered the way it should be?
Oh, the discussion we were having is whenever anybody thinks about an inexperienced motorcycle rider, they always picture the teenagers wearing the shorts and the flip-flops and no helmet on some sort of sports bike. But there's another demographic of new motorcycle riders out there that worries me too, and that is the baby boomers and the adults whose first motorcycle is a big 700-pound beast that they may have not had much practice on and they don't have a lot of experience.
An offshoot of the demographic changes, the baby boom?
Sure.
Growing up?
Definitely.
Kids going out of the house, got some money to throw around, maybe?
Time to buy some toys, yeah.
Why do you think older bikers are getting into accidents?
It's sort of a lack of experience. I mean, you have a lot of life experience, but the first time on your bike is when you're a little older, a little slower, and you've got this huge piece of machinery under you because those things are heavy. You can get into trouble real quick without practice or training.
And Charles, you're a biker?
Yes, definitely.
I gather?
Mm-hmm.
For many years now?
25 years, I guess.
Okay. Thanks very much for coming into the show. Thanks for the idea. Mm-hmm. Now, our In the Loop producer, Sandon Totten, was inspired, let's say, when he saw your idea about motorcycles. Hey, Sandon.
Hey, Jeff. How's it going?
I'm doing well. So, you also know somebody, an older someone, let's say, who bought a Harley?
Well, actually, it was a Kawasaki Vulcan, and it was my mom.
Sounds like a nice setup. Tell us
more. Okay, a few things you need to know about my mom. She's an ER doctor. She's about 50 years old, and she is ferociously determined. When she decides to do something, nobody can talk her out of it. That's what happened about 10 years ago. You see, my mom was having this midlife crisis.
I still don't think it was really that much of a crisis, but anyway.
Okay, that's my mom, and she calls it her midlife event. Whatever. All I remember is this. I came home from school one day, and in the garage, I see this motorcycle. A big, chromy, angry-looking thing, just like parked right there, sneering at our white minivan. I run upstairs completely shocked, and in the kitchen, both of my parents are laughing at me.
Yes, we did think it was pretty funny the way you said, holy shit, there's a bike in our garage. Poor Sandon looked so astonished.
Yeah, real funny, Mom. The kind of fun that can get you killed. Every day, an average of 12 Americans wipes out riding one of these death traps. And buying one is the kind of impulsive, irresponsible, half-baked idea I'd expect from someone young and stupid like me. Not my mom.
It certainly was an impulse, Sandon. But I don't think it was all that irresponsible. I was very careful about how I did things.
That's true. She did buy every form of protection known to man, from a full-face helmet to fireproof socks. And in the end, she was going to ride this thing no matter what I said. My only hope was that this was just going to be a passing phase. It wasn't a passing phase. My mom bought a full leather outfit to go with the fireproof socks. She started cutting the sleeves off her t-shirts. She even joined a biker gang. Okay, so it was a biker gang for doctors and lawyers, so less six packs and brass knuckles and more briefcases and bifocals, but still, there was something kind of cool about it all. My mom was like Peter Fonda in Easy Rider, except short, female, and middle-aged. But the point was, my mom was having fun. This was the happiest I'd seen her in years. So when she announced to our family that she was going to take a cross-country trip on her bike, I asked to ride along on the back. Of course, she said yes. She's my mom. So we packed up our stuff in two saddlebags, and we hit the open road. We started out on the West Coast. It was summer, so it was hot.
Really hot. About 105, 110 at least.
But when we reached the Rocky Mountains, things cooled down a bit. My mom's bike was pretty powerful, so we had no trouble climbing those hills.
It was effortless. We just kept on rolling. It didn't matter if we were going uphill or downhill.
Our bike was unstoppable.
And then we came out of the Rockies and all this incredibly beautiful scenery. And
we were swooping and swooshing down the roadway.
Downhill towards Denver and down and down. And suddenly we hit the city and out of the city on the other side.
And then nothing. It was flat and boring for miles. The most entertaining thing we'd see for hours were billboards by the side of the road, like Bob's Diner, 10 miles. Bob's Diner, 8 miles. We'd read those signs like they were literature.
Good line, reading it like literature.
Thanks, Mom.
Do you remember when we ran out of gas?
Yeah. We were somewhere in Kansas, I think. It was late at night, and we totally forgot to fill up the tank. Eventually, the bike just rolled to a stop. We were in the middle of nowhere, and it was pitch black, so we just decided to go out in the middle of a deserted field and look up at the stars. Mom and I started talking about everything, from motorcycles to life. And it was the first time I really got to hear about what she was like when she was my age. I remember thinking, we've got a lot in common. On that trip, I think we made a pretty good team.
We made a great team.
Yeah, we did. And I finally came around to the idea of my mom being a biker. Then, the accident. It was a couple months later. Mom was heading to work one day, and she lost control of her bike in the middle of a turn. She survived it okay, but her knee was busted pretty badly, and the bike was totaled. The crazy thing is, this didn't stop her. She bought a new bike and was back on the road in weeks. All my fears came flooding back. I mean, this is my mom. She's fragile. She breaks easily, and I just don't want her to die.
I'd really rather not die. I've got a lot of living I want to do. But this is part of living instead of just existing.
Yeah, but why can't that mean staying at home, just hanging out with your kids? I don't know, knitting or something. Enough is enough, Mom. You've had your fun. It's time you ditch the bike.
Okay, first of all, you're not my parent. I gave what I needed to do to raise you and to set you out on the world. Now it's time for me to do what pleases me, and I know the risks, and the risks are worth the benefits.
She's convincing. As much as I bite my nails, pull my hair, she's a grown-up, and she can do what she wants. I can tell her how I feel, but in the end, there's a point when you just have to trust your parents. Trust that you've raised them well, and hope that they make the right decisions.
Sandon Totten. Thank you, Sandon. All right, let's bring the lights up here and talk with our audience here in the UBS Forum for a little bit. So, the baby boomers hopping on their bikes. That's a trend Charles Robinson thought was worth getting into. Let's see if we can get some other trends. Who's got another trend you've spotted? Something that might be worth pointing out over the past year. Yes, that might be the new record for a hand going up at the beginning of an audience segment on this show. Congratulations. Let's get back there. Just give us your name and where you're from.
Melissa Summers from Minneapolis. I've noticed over the past couple of weeks since it started snowing how many bicyclists there are on the roads. Is everyone seeing all these bikers? Yeah. I'm a winter biker. I'm an ice biker, and it's just so awesome to see all of these bikes out there. And I think part
an
of
ice biker?
Yeah, I bike all year.
Yeah? Is that I've never heard that term. Yeah. Ice biker, there's a name for it.
Yeah, it's just it's really cool to see all people using all kinds of different modes of transportation, clearly to get to work, not just to go out for fun.
Now, as somebody who doesn't bike in the winter, I don't always see that as cool.
Oh, it's very, very cool.
I see that as borderline insane.
It's really not as bad. A friend of mine says there is no bad weather, just bad clothing.
Wow. Share a few tricks with us here, then. How do you keep your bike upright, for example?
Go very slowly. And turn really wide and don't lean when you turn. There's just some different strategies you have to do.
What do you think is going on that's maybe behind the trend? More people.
I think we're all insane. Oh. And I think the other thing is that traffic sucks. I mean, I'm sorry.
Sucks is okay. It's okay here.
And who wants to drive into downtown Minneapolis, especially without the 35W bridge? And you know, oh my God, try driving up Hennepin. You know, so I beat him to work sometimes, and he takes the car, and we work at the same place.
Melissa, thanks very much.
Thanks.
That's a great one. Of course. All right, any other trends that have been rattling around in your brains as our show has gone forward? Yeah, right here, your name and where you're from.
Hi, I'm Robert from Woodbury. I actually didn't know about this one until just recently, and it's a little bit too late, but I discovered flash mobs. Uh-huh. Which are where people just don't know anything about what's going on, but they just all get together at one random place and do something random, and I so want to do it.
There was one in the paper this morning. 80 people went out and bought Best Buy t-shirts, put them on all at once, walked into a Best Buy, and just started walking around the place. Yeah, a flash mob's been around a couple of years, I think, but...
Well, the news to
news to you, so... Thanks, Robert. All right, let's move ahead with somebody who has taken sort of a personal approach to the news over the past year, Larry Baker. Looking for Larry Baker, right here in front. Larry, thanks very much for coming to the show.
Thank you.
Now, we've heard a lot this year about global warming. The environment was a big news topic. So what struck us when we heard from Larry was how he's personally involved in this issue. So in a nutshell, Larry, what's the project that we heard about from you?
Well, what we're doing is looking at CO2 emissions and other materials flows through households. In individual households in Falcon Heights.
A suburb here in the Twin Cities.
A suburb, yeah, right nearby, a middle-class suburb. We're doing questionnaires, we're looking at people's odometers, we're getting their electric bills, and trying to look at the whole picture. And what we're finding out, first of all, is that between the lowest 10% consumption, highest 10% consumption, there's about a threefold variation. So what this means is that your neighbor could be using three times as much carbon or emitting three times as much carbon as you. Or vice versa, you could be emitting three times as much as them.
What else has come out of the study?
Well, over the past 30 or 40 years since the energy crisis in the 70s, we've improved the efficiency of everything, cars, airplanes, insulation, yet we've not decreased energy use per capita one bit. We have more efficient cars, but we drive more. We have more efficient insulation in houses, but we build bigger houses. We even eat 25% more than we did in 1970.
Is that so?
Yeah. Wow. And if I could add one thing, you know, the sort of practical outcome, you know, if you were in one of these households, what really makes a difference both to your budget and to the world's CO2 budget? One is to drive less, and when you have a chance, buy a car that has better gas mileage. That was one of the biggest components of our household CO2 budgets. The second, if you have older homes, like in Falcon Heights, insulate them. And the third is to fly less. A lot of us could fly a bit less than we do. And those things right there would make probably a 30% difference in your overall energy use.
So, Larry Baker with the University of Minnesota. You study this stuff for a living, of course. Getting your hands dirty, kind of going behind the headlines with some ordinary folks learning about environmental issues. Thanks very much for coming tonight and talking about it, Larry. You're listening to In the Loop from Minnesota Public Radio, and I'm Jeff Horwich. This next story we've got was a real treat for us to run across for our episode tonight, The Year According to You. 2007 was Marie Ring's first year as a U.S. citizen. Now, that's not in itself so extraordinary. The U.S. naturalizes more than 700,000 people a year. What's remarkable is that Marie did it at 106 years old. The government says she is the second oldest person ever to obtain her U.S. citizenship. The record holder, by the way, was an Armenian guy who did it when he was 117. That'll stand for a while. But 106 is pretty amazing. Marie's family were Germans living in Russia. Their boat docked in Galveston in 1906 when she was 6 years old. She lives today in a nursing home in Little Falls, Minnesota. Marie is 107 now, and I drove a couple hours to visit her this week.
Man is here. He's going to talk to you about your life, okay?
Okay.
I don't have much of a life.
Yeah.
Now.
Well, yes, you have had quite a life, believe me.
Marie's daughter and granddaughter came too. That's her daughter, Dee, you're hearing right there. They say at the time of the naturalization ceremony, she couldn't stop talking about it. By the time I visited, she was a little more reserved about the experience.
Well, I don't know. I don't think I feel any different than I did before because I was sad at home here. In America, I think it's better to be a citizen than to be a foreigner all the time.
Now, Marie's granddaughter, Jody, suggested the story, which, believe it or not, appears to have gotten no more coverage than a picture in the county paper. She also worked hard to make this citizenship happen. It's not easy when someone's 106. Jody is here tonight, along with your mother and daughter. So, talk to me for a minute about why this was so important to you, for your grandmother to be able to do this.
When my grandmother was 105, it was 2005, she became ill, and she told me a story. She said that when she was working as a migrant farm worker at the age of 7, that she used to crawl through the sugar beet fields in Kansas, thinning sugar beet plants. As her health continued to decline, it no longer seemed like enough to me to have her simply buried in America. I wanted her buried an American. And so I initiated the process and sent letters off to a group of legislators and asked them to help facilitate her naturalization as a citizen.
Well, it's a great story. Thank you for sharing it with us. We thought one of the best ways to capture Marie's story here on In the Loop would be with some music. So when I got back from Little Falls, I got my notes together and wrote up a song in honor of Marie Ring. 1, 2, 3. Ice floats down the Volga at night, a scene from a century before. Covered with straw that someone set alight, and a little girl watches from shore. Germans brought there to work on the land, they could feel the ground starting to shift. The blacksmith, her father, put boards on the windows, set the whole family adrift. The house would still be there and they could return if they didn't like what they find. But the Russia they left and the years that would follow took everyone they left behind. Little girl lies in a vast Kansas field, head to toe covered in beets. Everyone helping to bring in the yield. She's safe and warm underneath. Five states working crops till they set down to dairy. Five brothers, five sisters in her. The good Lutheran path is to grow up and marry, but young Marie isn't so sure. Maybe a nurse would be something to shoot for, but there's no high school in town. At age 36, with an old childhood friend, she finally does settle down. And the years go by. You can't wonder what might have been with a good man. Children, life starts again. Family on hand, Grandma gets down on the floor, does 10 sit-ups to show that she can. They're all afraid she'll do more. 40 years now since her husband is gone, had one son taken away. Passes each day with the radio on, with an ear to the news of the day. Well, she lives alone till 101. That headstone she bought has to wait. It turns out there's still something that she hasn't done. She proves it's never too late. Marie at 106 sits in bed. At her side is the government man. And she won't hear so well when the document's read, but you can't pry the flag from her hand. Ice floats down the Volga at night, a scene from a century before, covered with straw that someone set alight, and a little girl watches from shore. Thank you. Story about Marie Ring, 107 years old, in Little Falls, Minnesota. I'm Jeff Horwich. You're listening to In the Loop, our episode tonight, The Year According to You. We're building the whole hour off of ideas from listeners. We waded through lots of great suggestions about what the media might have missed. There's a common sentiment out there that the media doesn't cover the good news about the places where we live. Here in the Twin Cities, there's an acute case of this in North Minneapolis. Here's a selection of recent headlines from the papers and public radio. Boy 16 charged as adult in drive-by. City has the authority to close problem properties. Girl shooting prompts calls for an end to North Minneapolis violence. That's a pretty reasonable selection of what you find from day to day. Preparing for this show, one listener told us we should talk about North Minneapolis, why it gets covered like it does, and what we might be missing. So we asked Lewis Porter to join us. Lewis, thanks very much for coming to the show.
Thank you.
Lewis is a former newspaper reporter with the Pioneer Press here in St. Paul, and now he's a communications consultant and lives in North Minneapolis. A lot of your work is directed at promoting the place, helping people understand it.
Yes, it is.
Now, I don't think it's going to surprise anybody who lives in Minnesota that the north side is kind of pegged, rightly or wrongly, as kind of the dangerous side of town. How much truth is there to that?
I was telling one of the producers I talked with prior to this show, I think that every city has to have a so-called dangerous side of town, and North Minneapolis has gotten that moniker. And that's not to say that bad things don't happen in North Minneapolis, but it's that the coverage is so disproportionate that it sort of reinforces that entire perception.
So there's this role that it sort of has to play? What would we do if there weren't North Minneapolis for us to
think of as the boogeyman, a place to be warned against, yes.
Huh. So what does it feel like to you that that we're missing about your neighborhood?
A lot of wonderful things are going on. I see community service organizations. I see arts organizations, churches, grassroots groups. I see people collaborating to address problems in North Minneapolis. That does get covered, but not nearly enough.
What's the problem? Does it start in the newsrooms? You've certainly seen it from that side, too.
Certainly, and I believe part of the problem is that negative coverage is what gets you on page one, what gets you the pats on the back from your colleagues, what gets you awards, what gets you promoted. Positive stories tend to not do that as much, so it's almost like a setup that reporters look for negative stories. And then it's become also a setup that reporters look in North Minneapolis for negative stories. So it becomes self-perpetuating.
How does that cycle set in? You know, you would think a different reporter comes on the beat, and somebody takes a fresh look at the place, right?
Well, one of the first things that reporters do is we pull what used to be the clips, the old-fashioned clips. Now we can just do it electronically. And you pull them, and you see all the negative stories, and you start following up, and it goes on and on and on.
So take us to the other side now, people in your neighborhood, and you certainly know a lot of community leaders in the area. Do people just pull their hair out over this, or are you kind of resigned to that's the way it's got to be?
I see a lot of despair and a sense of why contact mainstream media. They aren't going to cover it, and I always encourage people to contact them to raise a little bit of heck, to let their presence be known. But I think there's a feeling that it's not going to do any good anyway, so why should we waste our time?
Well, you believe that it is going to do good if people, what are the tricks?
Well, when I was working as a reporter, I saw that if enough people come in enough and write enough letters and call enough and make themselves a little bit of a pain, that change can happen. But I always tell people to be mindful that it's temporary change. It's not going to last really a long time. So I tell people you got to go back, you got to keep doing it. But it's a balance between being a pest and being a person who's a source of information, a person who's there that they can turn to, that will give them the perspective that they need.
Well, we're getting close to the holidays here, so I'll ask who's on your nice list. Who are there media organizations who you think are getting it right?
I think Insight News, The Spokesman, North News, community papers, but that have grown over the years and who have a solid base of sources and know the good stories, and people trust them and listen to them. They have their ear out there, their eyes out there, and what has happened is we talked before about people not wanting to go to mainstream media. They've gotten into a habit of going to the more community-based media, so I think they're doing a good job.
Well, Lewis Porter, your consulting company, let's just mention, is called LP2, Communications and Development. Thanks so much for coming here on In the Loop.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's go back out to our audience here at Minnesota Public Radio. Now's your chance to vent a little bit if you want to. What about the media drives you nuts? What you hear on the news? Sure, right back here.
Vern from St. Paul. What drives me nuts?
What drives
so
you
much
nuts?
Coverage on Britney Spears.
Well, that's a good one. Let's talk about celebrity coverage. Why? I mean, what is that playing upon in us? Do we want that? Vern doesn't want it. But yeah, we have one right over here. Give us your name and where you're from.
Sure, my name is Melanie. I'm from Osseo. I think that comes a lot into what we were just talking about with the North Minneapolis story. It makes us feel better. We're not Britney. We're not North Minneapolis.
Britney's the North Minneapolis of the celebrity world?
I think it just makes people feel better. It's us versus them. It makes people more comfortable.
That's a neat theory. Do people actually want good news about places? This theory that the media only covers the bad. Yeah.
My name is Anna. I'm from St. Paul. And I would hope a lot of times when I see something really horrible happening in the news, it will stir you to activism.
Well, does it work that way for you, or do you just turn it off?
I think, for example, I don't remember hearing a lot about the different school closings in the Twin Cities. And that urged me to search out the stories about them, be it online or in the newspaper. And I still don't know more as much as I should. But I felt like I should maybe learn a little bit more or educate myself a little bit more about what was happening in my community so I could take action against the bad news.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. Got another one over here.
Hi, my name is Greta. I'm from Minneapolis. And I actually wanted to comment on the lack of good news as well. I'm a planning student at the U, and I see a lot of really exciting things happening in the cities, including federal grant money going to alternative transportation initiatives. And I didn't know about that until I went to class. And I think that if people knew about some of the exciting things that could be happening in the cities, there'd be a lot more public participation and sort of organizing to get behind improving conditions instead of hearing about the poor conditions.
Thanks very much for speaking up. Oh, yeah. Got another one over here.
Brendan from Minneapolis. And
sure.
I kind of have to say, you kind of have to be careful what you wish for in wishing for good news. A lot of what you get when they actually give you that good news story will be like cheesy sun graphics, and then you'll see like dogs and babies and things like that. And it's not actually news, it's just, you know, fluff.
Well, what's good news in your mind? What would be better?
Well, like processes. And it's kind of boring, but it's actually like, you know, you see progress and things changing for the better. Those are good news stories, as opposed to just something cute or something interesting.
Thanks a lot. Let's talk before we move on about, Well, we have another one over here. Let's go.
My name's Mariah. I'm from Minneapolis. And I've noticed that sort of among my generation, there have been a lot of people trending away from television and away from the reality television programming and the negative news coverage.
And for radio listeners, your generation is younger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Young professionals, young educated people.
Uh-huh.
I, for one, am one of many people that I know who don't even own a television. Because they can't stand to watch it. They feel like their brain is dribbling out their ears. So we do turn to the internet, and we do turn to, you know, sources like Minnesota Public Radio for a more important and informed source of news because we just can't stand the television.
Thanks very much. We had another one in back here. Let's grab that.
Hi, I'm Mary Lynn from St. Paul. In talking about good news and bad news, I think in a lot of respects bad news is important because otherwise we're just living in a sheltered world. But the problem is when we're just bombarded with all this constant information of it, we do become numb to it. And then I think it gives us a sense of, okay, well, what could I possibly do to be an activist? What kind of change could I do? So instead people just turn off the TV. So I think there has to be some sort of balance. Whatever balance that is, I don't know. But
the trick is to engage people, not make them run away.
Yes.
Thank you very much. How about a round of applause for everybody who spoke up tonight? And let's have the smarts take us on into the program.
Trying to gauge what's coming down the line. Sometimes I think we're too busy looking at the pretty flashing lights to stop and try to read the warning sign.
One, two, three.
Hey, why isn't anybody telling me what I want to hear?
Why isn't anybody telling me what I long to hear?
Why isn't anybody telling me what I want to hear? Feeling a bit confused these days. Why should I care if what's his name broke up with what's her face? Seems our focus is diverted, our priorities inverted. The issue still gets skirted, and the same old crap just gets reworded.
Hey!
Why isn't anybody telling me what I want to hear?
Why isn't anybody telling me what I want to hear?
The things that no one mentions, are they beyond comprehension? Or are we just not paying attention? Shut up, 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 shut up,
shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up. Hey, why isn't anybody telling me what I want to hear? Why isn't anybody telling me what I
That's the Smarts rocking out tonight, largely because of Jimmy Kennedy on electric guitar there, Joe Weissman on bass, Morris Engel on drums. All right, let's turn once again to our listeners and hear about another story that seems to have gotten overlooked this year. Ben Seipel is with us tonight, if we can pick him out of the audience here. Hey, Ben, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Now, Ben is a graduate student at the University of Minnesota, and tell us about the story that you thought we might want to hear more about.
Okay. So if you look at the mass media and sports coverage, you don't see much about gay athletes, gay sports, or gay leagues. And I think that's kind of interesting, because here in Minneapolis and in St. Paul, there's been quite an expansion of gay sports, including a new soccer league and a new hockey league and great expansion to the softball league with like over 30 teams that are gay participants. It's kind of interesting, but you never read it anywhere. So,
well, among our staff of the show, we certainly hadn't recalled that we'd heard much about it, so it seemed like a nice opportunity to send our producer, Larissa Anderson, to the locker room at Mariucci Arena, no small hockey rink, by the way, at the University of Minnesota.
They're decent, so you can go ahead.
Well, that's where she met Kurt Gabrielson.
We live in Minnesota. This is a land of 10,000 hockey players, and it certainly is a land of many gay hockey players as well. So there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to put together some talented gay hockey players.
Kurt plays with the Twin Cities Gay Hockey Association on the blue team. That's the team for advanced players. Our producer, Larissa, saw these guys in action, and in the seats, she found another player with the TCGHA, Marc Le Chevalier.
I used to skate Saturday mornings for over 10 years. And then when I came out and the guys I was skating with found out I was gay, they just never called me and invited me back. In 1992, I tried to start a gay hockey league. I had about 15 people who showed interest, and we rented ice a few times. And it went about that one season, and it just kind of fell apart because we just didn't have the growth. And I don't think there was the interest at that time. People really didn't think about it then. I think the whole idea of being gay and athletic is just still kind of a developing concept in the gay community.
Take the shot, get the rebound. Let's go, come on in. Let's go,
move something
together,
guys.
Let's go. One, two, three.
Moves!
Let's go, boys, come on.
There are a lot of gay athletes who just aren't out, and they feel that when, say, college or high school or that organized level that they're involved in ends, they think the whole thing ends. One of our players here, Kirby, he figured hockey was done. And then this group came along and he discovered it and he's loved it.
So I didn't think we were going to get any goals.
My name is Kirby Pumper and I've been playing hockey since I was 2 years old and now I'm 21, so 19 years. And I've been playing with the gay hockey team for, this is my second year now.
Hey, shut up, you beat us.
I know growing up in high school and stuff like that, I wasn't out because I knew it would affect the way other people treated me in high school. So once I came to college, I found this gay hockey association, and I thought it was right for me, so I came out.
Well, we'll make sure we get another one set up.
What's new this year is we have a new logo. First, what we did was we came up with a name, and then Pierre over there came up with this.
It's the drawing of a moose head. It looks, well, it's got horns, so it's horny, and it's got flames, so it's flaming, and it's got a nose ring, and it looks pretty fierce and mean, so it looks gay.
You know, for us, Pierre and I, and most of the team, thought it was important to have the words Big Gay Moose on our jersey.
Moose!
The word gay shouldn't be something that people shy away from. It's kind of one of those things where it's like we're not hiding anything from anyone anymore.
That was an even game, though.
That's Kirby Pumper, along with Pierre Tardif and Marc Le Chevalier. Those are some hockey names for you. Ben Seipel is the guy who suggested the story to us. Larissa Anderson, our producer, put that together. So let's see. We've covered the growing gay hockey scene. Things you're not hearing out of North Minneapolis. One of the oldest people to become a citizen in this country. The baby boom in motorcycle sales. Young Muslim ambassadors. And the rise of the Spanglish music scene. Sure doesn't read like the lineup of the nightly news. What ties these all together is that you told us these stories mattered to you. And most of the time, you know, life doesn't rise and fall with the news headlines. Before this year was up, I'm glad we had a chance to chase down even a handful of these suggestions. Kind of gives a sense of just how much more is out there and what we might get a better view of if we keep working like this to cut through the clutter. Now, speaking of all that clutter, we've heard about it a little bit tonight. Before we end, it might be nice to just say farewell to the stories from the past year that we've had quite enough of. Thank you very much. One of the nicest things about the end of the year is that you get to kind of start fresh. Out with the old stories, in with some new ones. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Please take Britney away, send her off with OJ, make them all disappear. It's the most wonderful time of the year. That's right. It's the happiest season there is. No more Duke lacrosse crap, Marion Jones took the rap, Michael Vick sure got his. It's the happiest season there is. No more Valerie Flame, I'm so sick of that name, and old Scooter at last took the fall. That faint sound you make out as the year shuffles out must be Larry Craig trying to stall. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Karl Rove left the palace, Alberto Gonzalez is out on his rear. It's the most wonderful time. Smart!
It's the most wonderful time.
All right, everybody.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
There you go. Well, that's our show for this evening. Thanks, everybody, for joining us in person and by whatever medium you happen to be using to consume our program. Musical accompaniment, as always, from our house band, The Smarts. You can watch videos from the live show, get the podcast, check out the Loophole blog at minnesotapublicradio.org/intheloop. You can also join our Public Insight Network, the growing army of listener collaborators who make it possible to do what we do. Episodes like this. In the Loop is produced by Julie Seipel, Sandon Totten, and Larissa Anderson, with our amazing interns Bradley Campbell and Anton Fryant. Thanks to Molly Bloom, Melody Yang, Andrew Haig, and Preston Wright from Public Insight Journalism. We get multimedia help from Christina Schmidt. Our photographer is Jeremy Pavlik. Our technical director here is Josh Kubasta, with our engineer Maury Jensen and live producer Alan Freckman. Jim Gates is the editor of In the Loop. Our senior producer is Mark Brule. Production supervised by Leif Bishop. The executive producer of the show is Michael Scholar. Thanks to all of our guests tonight. Thanks to this extraordinary audience, everybody who sent in ideas, and everybody who joined us and spoke up here tonight. I'm Jeff Horwich. Hope we'll see you next time in The Loop. Well, everyone, there you have it, the last show of our fall season. If you missed any of the 9 new episodes we had over the past couple months, they're all waiting for you to discover and download, along with lots of videos from the live tapings. That's at minnesotapublicradio.org/intheloop. While you're there, please give us your feedback on the season. What you have to say helps us think about when and how we might be back. Thank you for listening.